Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got a lot in store for you.
We got a ton of stuff. Shall we just get into it?
Let's just jump right into it.
Boom!
Booyakasha. All right. Yeah. We're talking performance. Another preview of IE9 release. We released one the week of Mix 2010. Now this is the second IE preview you can download. You can go to ietestdrive.com and download this. Lots of changes to performance. Lots of benchmarks you can check out.
More standard support. And Dean on the IE blog, which is where this post is taken from, talks about the HTML5 support, some of the issues with some of the ACID tests where things are incompatible, and there's a number of things that need to be worked out in the committees and so forth. But really interesting to see kind of the up-to-the-minute differences on IE.
Yeah, and it's cool. If you haven't actually downloaded the IE9 platform preview or whatever they're calling it, it doesn't feel like a typical browser because it doesn't have like a back button and favorites and all that stuff. They're just focusing on rendering, standards, performance, all that jazz. So it's a little weird the first couple times you use it, but
sure,
it's cool because I think that allows them to iterate more quickly and get your feedback.
So. And there's a number of videos on Channel 9 that actually go through some of these performances, SVG performance, JavaScript performance, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And some of we mentioned some of the CSS issues and CSS rendering issues as well. So definitely check it out, and lots of videos if you're into browsers and this whole internet thing.
It's a fad.
Yeah.
So speaking of another fad, the cloud. So this is a sample that the Azure team released. This is basically how would you build a Facebook app that can then take advantage of Windows Azure?
Yeah, so let's say you want to build your instant Facebook application. What you can actually do is take this sample, which is a cloud poll, like say you're building a...
like a survey mechanism?
Yeah, something. Or, survey apps are really popular. Which Star Wars character are you?
I would have to be Luke.
I was Solo, so...
Perfect. All right, we're not competing. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Thank
Jennifer
God.
Aniston.
Jolie.
Aniston.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the whole point of this is it's all wrapped up in using best practices on how you can scale up an Azure application. So this is kind of cool. It's actually done by the folks who build some well-known Facebook applications. And it was actually a Mix session on how to build Facebook applications using our platform.
Cool.
At Mix that you can check out too.
Cool. I'm changing my mind. I'm Chewbacca. So this is being...
You smell like a Wookiee.
Bing Visual Search has added a capability where you can search for PowerShell commandlets. This is really cool, and I can imagine lots of other types of visual searches along these lines, but let's say I'm looking for a PowerShell commandlet that does a TFS git.
Did you say commandment?
Commandment.
That's awesome. Thou shalt not.
I'm an evangelist. What do you mean?
Thou shalt not add computer. All of a sudden, I turned into JFK. Ayara.
So anyway, this allows you to basically type for what you're looking for, being PowerShell commandlets, and then refine from there. And then once you find one you are interested in, you click on it. It shows you a bunch of metadata about that commandlet.
Yeah, what does it actually do? Mm-hmm. How do you call it? Here's a code example. But you can do it all in that visual search.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is very cool.
Yep. Unity. So,
yes.
So I originally, when I was reading about Unity, I thought this was a mocking framework, but you described it a little bit differently.
Yeah, it's like a dependency injection thing. So the idea being, and you kind of have to work through an example, but like let's say you have a real object or say a real database or some sort of resource. You've built your application to use an interface such that you can either have a real object or load the test data, or a fake object, right? One of these examples, normally you have to manually switch those to load those in. Like, hey, I want to do the test run. I need to switch, my interface of iDatabase to be a real implementation of the database that actually goes against the production data, or a fake one, right?
Okay.
What these do, and there's several of these, Castle Windsor and ones that we've talked about, they take the process of the object creation out of it for you, so that you're not changing code, you're changing a configuration file. So I can now, instead of saying, writing code to point to the real database of the other one, I'm now taking all that stuff and say, when we go to create this class, figure out which class to actually create, based on this configuration file.
So, it's
so if I need to change this configuration file, I can now change what classes are actually built.
So it's facilitating late binding, is that right?
It's not late binding because everything is early. It just facilitates the object factory pattern, right? Where I'm not creating a class. I'm telling you what class to create based on this stuff, or I'm telling you what class to create based on this configuration file. So the example I use is Windows Phone, and we had to do a very rudimentary version of this. We weren't using Unity because there was no Unity for Windows Phone. But there's an accelerometer.
Right.
The accelerometer does not work unless you have a phone.
A real actual device.
Okay, a real actual device.
Yep.
But we still wanted to test, and we actually had a way. So we built this fake accelerometer that would load up recorded data and basically fire through a bunch of numbers and simulate what it's like to go left and right.
Okay.
Right? So we have that stuff in a fake accelerometer. So that way, even if we just have our laptop, no phone, we can mock, using our mock object, which is that fake accelerometer, we could have used something like this to say whether to load the real one or the fake one. So it basically does all the work of which object should I load for you, and which dependencies do you need because of that, et cetera.
Okay, so coming back to Unity, this is from Patterns and Practices.
This
is a framework for building your own.
And I'm sure there's a more tight way to describe what I just said. There's got to be a way to say it in one sentence that doesn't include a bunch of pattern factory and crazy words.
Okay, got it. So Unity 2.0 released.
Yes. Boom. And there's a desktop and Silverlight version.
Friend of the show, Dan Waters.
Yeah.
So put together a Coding for Fun article.
Can't do a shot, but yeah, he can write an article about sound.
He can, yeah.
And we've talked about his sound series where he goes through kind of like dissecting how sound works.
Right.
The idea here is he actually goes through building sound waves and all the things that happen from a programmatic perspective. So if you're new to, say, audio programming, you'll definitely want to check this out, as well as his other series on sound. And he also walks through even just the WPF things to visualize how to draw sine waves and things like that. Yeah.
Nice. I didn't even cross my mind. Yeah, that would be a tough one. He's not using like GDI Plus or anything, is he?
WPF, baby.
All WPF. Nice. Very cool.
And direct sound, obviously, for playing sounds.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Obviously.
So this is comes from Greg's blog. So this is a 5-hour workshop. I think it is.
Yeah, it's like an online registration free. Where so you have to register, but it's free.
Gotcha.
And it's a SQL performance tuning.
Nice. And it's Andrew Kelly who's putting this together. So all about how to get the most power out of SQL Server 2008.
Now, we looked at his photo and, you know, love you, Andrew, and appreciate the free content.
Yeah.
He looked like a motivational speaker.
He does kind of look like Tony Robbins, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, how much do you have performance problems in your database? Do you need somebody? As a former client, I can tell you that I had performance problems. You can increase your performance.
Past performance issues do not have to dictate future performance of your SQL Server. We can work with you on this, and you can take back control of your database.
You can do it. The power is in your hand. All you need is SQL Management Studio, a free download.
Awesome. I hope he actually sounds like that.
Yeah,
be so
how
cool.
Great would that be?
I would
be?
Watch everything he produces. That's so cool.
I just hope he doesn't have those horse teeth that Tony Robbins does. Okay.
Sorry, if we just lost another viewer. You just scared off Tony Robbins. He's no longer going to check us out. So this is
he's going to keep watching.
An offline help viewer for Visual Studio 2010. So Visual Studio 2010. What you're gonna correct me here?
No, I'm
Go
not.
Ahead.
I'm not.
Visual Studio 2010 switches the way that you view help. It's all browser based now. A lot of people don't like that. So the MSDN documentation team has come out with this sort of offline browser that you can use to go through and view the help.
Yeah, so Scott Hanselman talks about this, and it is a power tool. It's technically unsupported, but it gives you things like that type ahead, so you can actually search the index while typing. I think the reason what I was going to say is I feel this sort of pain because April Regan, you know, one of the things she wanted to do, if you remember, when she was on the documentation team, was really think about the future, how we could take the help files and documentation to help developers, because this is one of the key pain points that folks have felt, and they had to cut a bunch of features, unfortunately. Excuse me. So that's where I was coming from, in terms of what would be the ideal experience and the dream experience.
So you're saying that this was originally in scope, and then it was cut, and now it's a power tool.
No, I think there were a bunch of other things that were not in scope and not in here, in terms of if you had to rethink the entire animal that is documentation and how it would work. And there are some things in improvements to MSDN that folks have probably seen. But
right. Well, that's what Dev 11's for, right?
Yeah, there's always the next version.
Yep. So this is a really cool video. It talks about how to use the SQL Server Sync framework to sync your data up to Windows Azure, which is neat because if you think about the problem of, let's say I've got, you know, two laptops and, you know, those laptops contain all my pictures and I want to try and sync that across two different SQL databases, right? Maybe pictures is a bad example, but I have two databases that I want to
pictures.
Keep in.
Maybe that's a great scenario, like family pictures.
Okay, yep. And so I want to keep those in SQL blobs and sync them across multiple databases. Well, I may not always have both those laptops on all the time, but the cloud is always on, right? Mm-hmm. And so wouldn't it be nice if anytime I connect up the internet on one of those laptops, it can start syncing with the cloud, and the cloud basically becomes this master database for me to facilitate all these different sync relationships. And so this shows you how you can do that using Windows Azure.
Yeah, so I mean, imagine, let's say we had ours synced up, and I had five photos, you're connected to the web, you know, you see those sync, and those five photos get synced down to you, for example, in our Dream app. Or we add somebody else to our new app, they would automatically get all the pictures downloaded.
Right.
So it's very cool.
It's like Live Mesh, but for SQL Azure. Right?
Yeah, it's just a framework. I mean, it's not like...
Right, it's a framework, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It shows you how to use it. Yep. Okay. Miguel de Casa, so...
Yeah, let's argue.
Living... Oh, I'm not going to argue with you.
I'm not arguing this with you.
So basically, this is Miguel's saying, what if we had the CLI enabled in the browser? What kind of experiences could we enable? He talks about how each web page could basically have its own app domain, and talks about the different programming models that could potentially open up. So
yeah, you can look at some of the source code here and to see the sort of inline script that you could potentially do. But this is very cool and kind of a interesting idea in terms of the limitations of plugins versus native JavaScript. And what if the CLI or something like it was native? There's just so much you can do in terms of static languages, type languages, or dynamic languages, untyped languages. So it's kind of interesting to see. And it all started by Joe Hewitt, one of the Facebook developers, who built a Facebook iPhone app, talking about the limitation and how things like Flash are a good thing. Because if you were just waiting for W3C to be finished with HTML5, you wouldn't have video, you wouldn't have all these different features. And you know, some of the key things that have really happened was browsers innovating before the standards that really helped drive the standards.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of an interesting, a lot of comments on this one.
Video on the internet, that's another fad. So Windows Phone 7 application lifecycle. So this is from our friend Jaime Rodriguez, and he talks
about... And Yohai.
Yohai. And they talk about the lifecycle of an application as it goes... and starts spreading
across
the phone, or
like everything that happens in the app marketplace.
Yep.
How the app gets downloaded to users, how you install and uninstall, and the other things, just like pause, those sort of events that happen on the phone.
How do you update the app? Do they talk about that as well?
Yep.
Cool. All right. So this is Tim Heuer, another friend of the show.
Yeah.
Talking about, what is this, the Silverlight Toolkit?
The Silverlight Toolkit, yeah. There are multiple new themes. So this one is the desktop theme in the top left corner, which you can see is kind of nice. And the idea is if you want something that looks like a Windows 7 desktop, you can use that theme. The bottom right is one that looks more like a Windows phone. So it has that nice Segway font and...
The Metro kind of look and feel.
Sort of minimalist, you know, flat buttons, that sort of thing.
That's cool. I like that you could get the Windows phone look and feel for an application. Like I have the Pandora little applet that runs and helps you stream music, and that seems like the ideal type of app to convert into the Metro kind of theme, so you can have those different pages and go back and forth. Just a pretty cool, maybe I'll write that, pretty cool example of...
We do have ways to get the music off Pandora, but I don't want Ed Keim to sue me, so I'm not going to talk about it.
CSS tools for ASP.NET. So this is three different kind of buckets of tools to help you with CSS around ASP.NET development. The first one of these is Blueprint CSS. So this is just a package of templates that are ready to go, different types of themes, if you will. Right?
Yeah, so if you have to start with the CSS theme, go ahead and start with this. It has some of the quirky stuff in there as well for different browser support, but it's like a framework for starting your own CSS.
Okay.
Next one, whose name I forget, do you remember?
Is it Buckets? Is it... we'll have to look it up.
We'll have to look it up. Okay,
Number two is
Something that does the minification, similar to YUI's compressor for JavaScript. It does it for CSS. So you can add in all your CSS files. It does a bunch of different features. And one of the coolest things is it actually interacts with number three, which is something that's been around for Ruby, which is a tool called Less. Mm-hmm. What it allows you to do is actually build code to build CSS. So... let's say I'm reusing a color, like a color of blue. Mm-hmm. I have to define it in each unique style or each custom name. I have to say the color or the FF, you know, the hex value. This allows me to define it as a variable and then use that variable all within. So it's a lot easier to sort of clean and simplify and manage your CSS files. The second tool, actually...
Bundler,
yes. The second tool bundles... .less files, which are that CSS macro-ish language into your CSS. So it's very, very cool, and it all works on ASP.NET.
And includes an MS build task as well, so you can wire it right up to your team build environment.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is very cool.
Yeah. So picks of the week.
Picks of the week! Okay, so mine... Did I go too high?
No, it's good. It's good. We'll fix it in post.
Okay, mech warfare. So our friends at Charleston Robotics have a cool video on some of the mech warfare. So these are machines that have a webcam on them. To play, you can't actually see the field. You can only drive through that camera. And they have an air gun, and these sensors that are force sensors, they're colored, but underneath are several force sensors, so you can actually see when you're being shot by what look like BBs, effectively.
Oh, nice.
So you see people using the streets and buildings, because it's a small model city. They're using streets and buildings for cover. So, you know, this one moves back, this one moves out. And so that one, it starts shooting, and then it moves back, so it doesn't have a shot.
It's just like the real mech warrior, but
it's just like my
life.
Commute home. It's just like... So this is very cool. Yeah. Definitely check it out. Lots of cool stuff going on there. Cool Arduino chips that do wireless and programming and lots of cool stuff.
So one of my favorite types of mechs to drive back in the day when I played Mech Warrior on my computer and whatnot was the types that had the jump jets. Has anyone have like implemented the jump jets? Like,
no.
How awesome would that be? You just show up and your mech like jumps over the building. That would be awesome. And so my pick of the week, this is a little bit of self-promotion here, but finally, my labor of love, finally got this book out. So this is Professional Application Lifecycle Management with Visual Studio 2010. It is available on Amazon today, and I wrote it with some great co-authors, Martin Woodward, another friend of the show.
Yeah, Martin's been on. He's the one that had
the big team system MVP belt buckle. And then Ajoy Krishnamurthy over in Patterns and Practices, and Mickey Gousset, who's another VS ALM MVP. So it was great. It took me about, you know, last 18 to 20 months to write, but it's finally out there, and check it out on Amazon.com.
630 pages of joy. That's what this is.
So yeah, so it covers everything from Team Foundation Server, software testing, architecture tools, IntelliTrace is in there, static analysis. You can check out the whole table of contents on Amazon. And
what chapter did you write?
I wrote the entire section on software testing as well as the database development lifecycle chapters.
Ooh, yeah, so, the data dude stuff.
Data dude, database professional.
Pick this up. And are we giving this away?
Yeah,
we're giving this away to one lucky customer.
What
do they have to do? I don't know.
I don't know. We need to figure that out.
All right.
Put me on the spot there.
Go.
I don't know. We'll put in the text for the post. How's that? We'll put in the requirements for how you can win this this very boat.
Okay, but this one's mine.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
See you next week.